Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 129 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. Surprise! This is a surprise episode, a bonus episode released over the weekend because I owe you an episode from last Wednesday. That's how my brain works. So those of you who've been listening along for a little while will know that I release really regularly every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I think in the course of the podcast, which has gone for maybe a year and a half now, I've released a late episode once or twice and that's all. And I try to be super regular. This is the first time I've ever just not released one, so this is a bonus episode to make up for that one. And it is a couple of listener questions. They're both from the same listener. They're from a patron of the show who introduces himself, so I don't need to in the questions. And he sent me a couple of voice messages, and I'm going to be answering them as best I can. And I'll just preface it by saying every time I get a voice message, I do a little happy dance. So if you would like to make me do a little happy dance, then why don't you try and send me one as well? You can do it a couple of ways. You can either follow the link in the show notes, or you can just record a voice memo on your phone and send it as an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, and I will endeavour to play it on the show. So let's get over to those questions.
Hi Carl, Shannon Ward here from still cold and miserable South Australia. I wanted to talk to you about sun drying or solar drying. Obviously in our summers we get a lot hotter than you do, like we're talking upwards of 35 to 40 degree heat. I was just wondering, since I don't have a dehydrator, how would I go about, sun drying or solar drying some mainly tomatoes and strawberries, and how long it would take and what the process would be? Yeah, thanks, mate.
Okay, so the first thing to say to preface my answer is that it's not something that I'm experienced in. It's not something I've done or tried, largely due to two things. Firstly, the climate here in the UK doesn't really lend itself to solar drying as well as some other places. You know, you mentioned the difference in the summer temperatures that you get over there, which is just fantastic. We also, coupled with the temperatures, we're also a little island, so it's fairly humid here as well. Not like crazy humid like a lot of places, but a little bit more humid than some of the world. So it's not something you can't do here in the UK, absolutely not, but it's not something I've ever looked into in any great depth. Well, that's a lie, actually. I have looked into it in great depth, but a little while ago, and I never went any further than that. So the first thing I'm going to say is that you've got the perfect conditions for it, I would imagine. So, you know, it's definitely something you could be doing. Now, solar drying, when we use the word solar, we're talking about the sun. But before we even go that far, it's worth saying that you can dry things literally just by hanging them up. You've got a few things to think about. So I've got garlic drying at the moment, and we have that drying just outside our house, up underneath the eaves. We live in a thatched house, so the eaves are about a foot and a half deep. So it's really easy to just hang them just underneath the thatch there. They're not going to get any rain on them, and they will eventually dry out. So if you're going to do something like that, just hang them somewhere to dry out, you want to think about what it is. What is that plant? There are a lot of plants I'm not going to just hang up like that, even if I could, to dry out. Strawberries, for example, you know, they're going to get nibbled and eaten and munched on really quickly if I would just leave them hanging outside. Whereas my garlic, I don't really have to worry about anything coming along and nibbling it. So that's the first thing to think about is, because a lot of our thought process here is going to be about how we can create an environment where the food can just take its time to dry. So, you know, does it need protection from pests, first of all? And if it doesn't, then you might find that you can just dry it, you know, hang it on a washing line or whatever. The other thing, once we've got that far, if we do need to protect it from pests, then there's a few things you could think about. You could wrap it in a cloth, in like a cheesecloth or a muslin or something that's fine enough to stop any critters getting to it, depending on what you're trying to protect it from. And again, you could just hang it. But if you want to really utilize the sun and dry it in the sun, then you're going to want to create a box. And that box is going to want to have a clear top, I would suggest, like a sheet of Perspex or an old piece of glass. You're going to create basically like a tiny mini greenhouse. And while I say that, you know, it pops in my head that maybe the greenhouse is a great place to actually hang things up to dry them. And the sort of weather you're getting out there, Shannon, I imagine you could even do some drying in your greenhouse in some of the winter months. But if you create a little box, you know, just four sides and a base, and then have a sheet of glass or plastic over the top that's going to allow the sun to amplify itself through there, it's going to get quite warm in there. It's going to get much, much hotter than I imagine you could even use that as a solar cooker for some things. So, you know, managing the temperature so you're not cooking things, but you are drying them is going to be another issue when you've got those really hot temperatures. But the second thing to really consider is airflow. The whole purpose of a dehydrator is to dehydrate, and that means we need the moisture to leave the plant, leave the food. And once it's done that, it can't just stay in the air, because what's going to happen is the moisture in the air is going to get to such a point that no more moisture is going to come out of your fruit, of your strawberries and things. So you need really good airflow that's going to allow that moisture to then dissipate out. So, you know, make sure you've got lots and lots and lots and lots of ventilation holes all over whatever system you're going to use. And that kind of brings me back to the idea of just hanging things in a bag might be the easiest and simplest solution for you. But sorry, I can't be more help. Like I say, it's not something that I've spent a lot of time researching. But and the more I think about it, I'm wondering if you could get, like, if you imagine you created like a small ball out of wire, like chicken wire or something, with the top open, and if you were to use that and then put your fruit in there and then put a muslin bag around that, that's going to stop that fruit from just falling against the sides of the bag and the bottom. It's going to hold it away so that nothing can kind of penetrate through the sides of that bag. Now, the other thing to say is when you're dehydrating anything, you know, particularly strawberries or tomatoes, two of the things you mentioned, something that's really high in moisture but also is quite a big plant, you're going to want to slice them. And when it comes to drying times, the thinner you slice them, the quicker it's going to be that the job is done. So we might spend, I think for things like tomatoes, we probably have them in our dehydrator for around 18 hours to get them properly dehydrated. And that's really, really small cherry tomatoes cut in half or thinly sliced larger tomatoes, and probably a similar amount of time for things like strawberries. But when we're drying herbs, you know, they can be done in just 5 or 6 hours. So it's going to really depend on the plant itself, the moisture content in it, and then obviously how you prepare it, how thin you slice it. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible.
Hi Carl, Shannon Ward here, mate, from South Australia. I just want to get some advice about adding compost to my already established beds. I know Charles Dowdy recommends adding a layer, like a 1 to 2 centimeter layer on top of the already established beds every year, I think he says, just to make sure that there's all these good nutrients and stuff in the soil. I just want to get some advice because I've got two separate beds. One I started in last year in November, so late spring, and I started another one in March in autumn this year. I just want to, and I just recently added mulch to these beds, and I just want to sort of get some advice about how I should add these composts and when I should be doing that. I really appreciate your help. Thanks for all you do, mate.
Okay, so a similar preface to my last answer, insofar as, I'm fairly experienced with this kind of stuff, but I'm still very much learning. I consider myself a student of this whole world. So when it comes to Charles Dowding's advice, he is an expert. I'm an enthusiast, and there's a big difference there. So I'm certainly, if I say anything that contradicts what he says, then go with his advice for sure. But what I do and what works really well for me, and I'm going to try to avoid using months, and I'm going to talk about seasons because then it's applicable wherever you are in the world. But when we look at our no-dig garden, what we tend to do is we would add our compost at any time, really, from November right through to the spring, at any point. And we would add that really whenever we get chance, whenever the bed is empty. So from probably September, October onwards, as I go through a cycle of planting, when we take out a load of plants and there's a little gap in between putting the next ones in, that's when I would be adding my compost. And the reason for that is pretty simple, is that's the compost I want to be planting into and through. When it comes to mulching, again, I'm going to do them at, or do that rather, at any time in the spring. And the reason I'm doing it in the spring is because the one of the main advantages I'm getting through adding that mulch is it's going to stop all that compost from drying out, and it's going to allow those nutrients to be available. And the reason, or another reason, another advantage of doing it that way round is you want a bigger distance time-wise between putting the mulch on and then subsequently putting the compost on than you do the other way around, because putting the mulch on top of the compost is kind of a way of enhancing the compost. It's a benefit to the compost. But doing it the other way around doesn't necessarily benefit your garden too much, because depending on what you're using for mulch, and I use wood chip, that wood chip can alter the pH levels in your soil if you dig it in. And if you were to put that wood chip straight on your soil and then put a load of compost on top, you might be absolutely fine as it breaks down with the pH levels, but you might not be. And the other thing to think about as well is during the course of those 2 or 3 seasons, once I've put my mulch on in the spring, it's then had a chance to go right through the spring, the summer, the autumn, and some of the winter with all sorts of weather and lots of time to really start breaking down. And it's already started to decompose and become worm food, so that when I then add my compost on top of it, it's much, much closer to being compost itself than it would be if I were to mulch and then just a month later put compost on top of it. And if you imagine that sort of lasagna in your garden, what you want to avoid really is having a layer of compost and then underneath it a layer of fairly fresh mulch and then your ground, because it's going to add a barrier for your roots to get through. It's going to be like a layer that the roots can't draw nutrients from, and it's also going to make that top bit of compost dry out quicker because it's effectively sat on top of, an open layer, a sponge that's going to just let that water fall straight from it and through down onto the rest of your ground. But that's not something you're really going to face once it's been on your garden for almost a year, because it's already broken down fairly nicely. And once it then becomes part of your soil, you don't have any of those issues that I just spoke about. So that's what I do, that's my understanding, and that's the reasons that I do it. I hope you found that useful and helpful. So there you go, that's the end of my listener question bonus episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. Shannon is a huge supporter of the show, and I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful to him. Thank you so much. And if you would like to become a patron like Shannon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. But you don't have to be a patron to send your questions in. Please do. I love hearing from you, and there's lots of different ways you can contact me. I'm sure that you know them all by now, but if you don't, you can send me an email at selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or you can contact me via the Facebook group. You can contact me via YouTube, where I still read and respond to, I think, pretty much every comment. So there's lots of ways to get in touch with me, and I love hearing from you. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I will speak to you soon. Cheers. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.